Welcome to Philly Fortune Talks with your host, Jake Penny, where the city's brightest minds share the secrets behind their success. Are you ready to be inspired?
What's going on, everybody? It's Jake Penny, the host of Philly Fortune Talks. I have the opportunity to have a good friend of mine, and honestly, I could say like a wisdom guru philosopher to me, at least, Jason Duran. He's the CEO of Culture Matters, an author at 27, and just an all-around wealth of knowledge, and honestly, a great person to be around. Jason, thank you for coming on.
Well, thanks, brother. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be on your show. Philly Fortune, let's make some money.
You build everything, and I think in the city of Philadelphia, so it kind of goes hand in hand with you on your journey.
Thanks, I appreciate that. I know I didn't know anyone in Philly when I first got there, but I think with some smiling and not waiting for someone else to come up to me, but me to go up to them and say, "Hey, how are you? What's your name? I'm Jay." The rest is history.
So could you tell us about your humble beginnings, where you started, how you got in one? Well, first of all, like philosophy in general, I know you've read hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books, hundreds of podcasts, your wealth of knowledge. What started your journey down that road of being interested in that kind of thing?
Well, it's good I'm on this show. You're doing me a favor. I could use the practice. I'm not doing enough therapy. Tell my story. Yeah, I first thought that culture mattered. Pretty obvious term, right? Culture matters. That idea first came into my mind when I was walking in a Barnes & Noble. I don't even know what town this was in. I'd have to do some Jungian psychology to remember that. But I'm walking into my periphery, I see this blue and white book. It just popped out. I always, throughout my life, would go to Barnes & Noble when I was feeling anxious, uncertain, unsure, lost. I'd go find something to give me direction. Generally, that was a book. So I'm at Barnes & Noble. I see this book stick out. I remember booking it down that aisle. And I open it up, or I pick it up. It says Uncontainable. Fairly obscure, banal book, random, Uncontainable. I open up the left-hand side. It says something to the effect that in 1978, Kip Tindall founded the Container Store with the idea to get things organized and attributed the massive success of this company and their culture to the seven core principles. I couldn't tell you today what those principles were, but I was inspired by that left-hand paneling of that book. And I asked myself, at the time we had started a gym brand, and I thought, well, what are our principles? What do we stand for? Who are we? Mentor at the time, who was the founder of that brand, said, you're the one that should run the meetings. He pushed me in that direction. And every day we had these meetings, I came up with the philosophies or the values of what I thought would represent the best experience of what it was that we were attempting to create together. And every day we had those meetings, and it changed me, or woke me up, I think, to something inside of me. The ability to speak, the desire to teach. The example, like there was some pushback in the beginning where one of our people who I had a lot of respect for, who worked really hard, they basically called me out and they said, "This is a very huge, colossal waste." I'm paraphrasing, but waste of time. Why are we in this meeting? And my initial response without any thought was, "That's a great question. It makes sense that you ask. Like there wasn't a, it wasn't defensive. I was like, yeah. So it was in my nature to lean in to the student, you know, in hindsight. And I said, hey, yeah, it makes sense. Can you give me an opportunity to show you why I think this conversation will help our experience, our customer experience, what it is we're doing. And so it was in those gatherings that happened with regularity that I started to become closer, I think, to my fate, essentially, to be more of a teacher, an advisor, and a steward of culture, a student and a teacher of, you know, what is culture as it relates to the workplace is where it started. You know, what is culture? How do we create it, curate it, cultivate it? What are the fruits? I mean, that book said, and this was early on, it said they had a lower, higher retention of great talent, higher profit per employee. The average employee got paid more than the average associate in that sector throughout the United States. There was all these exciting results that they were making an argument. It was because of their culture. And this is going back almost 10 years. And since culture has become ubiquitous, I hear it everywhere from people that bring it up. And, you know, so yeah, it was, I by no measure was I the first, because as you learn and experience and read, culture has been at the forefront of business for a long time, for decades. And it kind of comes in and out. People talking about it, not talking about it. So that was the first time that I thought, ah, culture, it matters.
So tell us, you know, you're out there solving a huge issue in the workplace, business, enterprises all over the nation right now. And that's culture matters, you know, going into businesses, you know, making sure they have the proper culture, values, ethics, people see the vision, they feel a part of the vision. So that way, efficiency and performance at all, is at all-time high peaks in those businesses, which honestly, I truly think lacks in our country right now is culture. And culture means a variety of things too. So tell us a little bit of that, how your style is when you're doing that. And you know, some success stories around that.
So the Culture Matters podcast is my culture. Relationships, my friends, even those my enemies, as Abraham Lincoln said, I don't like that man very much. Let me get to know him. I'll lean in to conflict, have people on that like I want to get to know better. Maybe I'm wrong about my thoughts or my views about them. People, 20% of our guests have been referred to the Culture Matters podcast by guests. People bring their culture to our culture. I look of it like the show Friends, where I want the listener to get to know my friends and to build a relationship because people come back. I mean, you've been on the show a couple times, so our listener can get to know you, Jake, better each time you come on and potentially pursue a relationship with you through Philly Fortune Talks. The Culture Matters podcast is the simplest way, and I think in some sense, me attempting to lead culture by doing the interviews and having the conversations and investing into my actual relationships, people that I know in my life. That's where I'd like to start with that, It's like the Culture Matters podcast is a living and breathing culture. In the beginning of the show, I've said, you know, because, you know, what's Culture Matters about? Like as a philosophy, read to think, write to develop, listen to hear what is unsaid, speak to let go. The interviews is me attempting to act out and model. Listen to hear what is unsaid. To do the best I can to the purpose of the show, to uncover the genius of our guest.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's where the show is at this point. It's not a lot of me reading excerpts from books or reading things I've written. It's or speaking and or monologuing. It's more so me being in the preface of like my life's book, not even yet in the introduction, leaning into people and interviewing them like you are today with me.
Right, right.
Working on that, something I associate as a leadership quality that I'm going to have to embody to be a great person, not just a great business person, but a great person. So the Culture Matters podcast is a living and breathing culture that people that are listening can experience by listening and paying close attention. There are lessons in those conversations, in the preparation that I do for it, and in the actual dialogue with the guest. It's me trying to teach culture without just talking about, okay, culture means story and culture means language and culture means rituals, like all that abstract kind of, is that really culture? Yeah, but also it's people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to bring up a big, you know, question of like, what's culture today in our society? I mean, it's unclear. It's right. Changing. It's changing. And there's different views of evolving, devolving, et cetera, et cetera. But as far as culture matters and working in businesses with business leaders, the Culture Matters podcast is a very accessible way for people that are listening to experience what we're doing with Culture Matters with business owners. We have our client partners come on the show regularly. We don't even talk about like, oh, what we've done or what we're doing. It's trying to really exemplify leadership because the results will say, you know, the results will speak. We go very deep. We've gone very deep with a handful of organizations and then wide, as opposed to just wide. Right? So it's not, so I would challenge people to listen to the Culture Matters podcast. And if they do, it'll become more clear who our client partners are, how we work with them, where their wins are. Because like, let's say I want to judge my success doing teaching and living culture, the building of culture or the curating cultures, by how successful those that have invested in us as a firm, as a advisory firm, how well they do, how successful they are. I hope that, I don't know if that's a sufficient answer.
That's a Jay Duran sufficient answer for you. So what skill do you think has attribute a lot to your success?
I'll go back to the reading to think. So, and 30 Days of Thought was a meditation. There's like a few components here, right? The Culture Matters podcast is that medium of my culture interpersonally. Those I know, those I don't know that I start to know because those I know introduce them to me. Those I want to know that I ask to come on. That's like a component of Culture Matters in our business and our brand. It's my culture. 30 Days of Thought is a process that I went through to become better, a more thoughtful person, more self-aware, more responsible, able to respond to conflict. And that the premise of that is to read and to write and to speak. So we have the listening that's happening in the Culture Matters podcast that I'm as a student. Yeah, just because people perceive me as a teacher in some context, I'm a student. That's one tranche. 30 Days of Thought is me, you know, a process where I was for a period of time writing my thoughts down and then putting, you know, all, it's becoming edited and provided as a process to anybody that could read these thoughts, write their thoughts in the book, because there's place for them to write. And then they're challenged to film a video of their thoughts and put it out online. 30 Days of Thought, read, write, speak. The integration of read, write, speak, and listen to hear what is unsaid is me trying to become a better leader
Right.
And that is some accessible to anyone, I think. So these, they're separate. There's the Culture Hours podcast. I'm practicing listening. 30 Days of Thought, I'm practicing thoughtfulness. You know, I'm becoming educated. I'm reading to think. I'm writing to develop. Writing is a form of thinking. And I'm speaking. I'm sharing my thoughts. Because in the 30 Days of Thought, you read to think, you write to develop, and you speak to let go. So it prompts you to write your thoughts, and then it prompts you to speak. Share them on social media. Because when I share my thoughts that I have then thought through, now what? I can be judged by the culture. Mm. Hey, that's a what you just said is like really not true, Jay. You know, like, or that is incorrect, and here is why. Or maybe add some curse words or whatever. That's a challenge that I have to now face before the crowd, like judgment.
Right.
As an individual. So I'm on this personal journey to improve while simultaneously being in the position that those that run companies have asked me to help them improve. So the podcast, I'm practicing listening. 30 Days of Thought, I'm practicing reading to think. Not just like reading a page and accepting everything as truth. Reading and thinking, could I see this differently? What does this mean? How about this? Like the act of reading. And it just isn't just for the listeners that don't read, maybe unable to, it's not natural to them, listening to audiobooks. It's a different experience, but oh my God, I don't even know where I'd be without audiobooks. So to answer your question, it's the reading to think. It's the writing to develop. And writing could be a letter to a friend. Writing could be a journal. Writing could be a book. Like, I don't consider 30 Days of Thought a book. It's a process. I have been working on the publishing of the theories that underline our like the methodologies that underline our consulting. They're unpublished at this point. 30 Days of Thought is a process. It was like an extension of my own process to develop as a leader. So reading to think, writing to develop, listening to hear what is unsaid, like listening, work. I prepare for the podcast. Like the way that you're actively listening to this conversation, thinking through, you know, putting that extra that intention, it develops, I think, executive presence, leadership capabilities. And then speaking, right? Standing in the crowd and sharing what one thinks. Those are things that I've practiced to be who I am and what I'm evolving into.
And Jay, what is the saying? I think it's like the quietest person in the room is usually the smartest or something like that. What you probably know better than I do.
Well, that could be because the
individual that talks the least and listens the most is probably the more valuable one or something of that nature.
Yeah, it's a well, that could very well be because the smartest loud people got killed by their group. There's value creation in listening. It just is so much the same. I'll give you an example, like having been in position to be on stage and say, and have the opportunity to say what I think, and simultaneously being the audience and feeling compelled to say what I think. They're two very different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
What one says in the audience, they may get stones thrown at them. What one says on the stage, those stones may transform into applause or roses. So we have to take that into consideration. I think there's a value lesson or a wisdom lesson. It's be careful to let knowledge or talent or the fruit from past work impede future growth. So like, for example, if I think I know it all, I run the company. I've hired the people to help me. At every team meeting that I have, I'm not asking them what they think. I'm not asking them questions. I'm not asking them what they see with the customers. I haven't learned how to switch gears from founder to CEO, from storyteller and visionary and orator and dream creator to listener, to inquirer, to integrator, to manager, to leader. Gotta, because when I have no employees, I just have customers I need to convince to give me a shot. Right? There's an interplay of listening and telling the truth. When I have customers and employees, there's even more of an interplay of listening and telling the truth. So I think that the quotes like that bring to mind, like you have a team meeting, you have a bunch of people that you're invested in to help you achieve your vision. And maybe they share their opinion and we say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, hold on. Maybe they actually do. That's why I hired them. There's an inherent power dynamic. There's an inherent, you know, it takes work to get wisdom out of the people. But if one isn't wise, one is arrogant, one's not going to get wisdom out of the people. And as we go up the organization, or whether it's a, yeah, an organization, a community, we get farther away from the customer experience. So who are we relying on to understand the customer experience? We're relying on our people, the people that are serving. So I think quotes like that are more reminders of values than actual intellect or knowledge or something that has been accumulated through experience that's outside of our behavior. I think it's a reminder. Like if the tyrant gets killed. So in, you know, the apes, the literature talks about how, you know, the head chimpanzee that's a tyrant will just one day get ripped apart by all the other chips, just limb to limb. And that's going to happen to leaders when they either never listen or forget. So I think that's where the wisdom is in a quote like that. Don't forget to ask maybe even someone that may know less or have less status or be less powerful and even be wrong. There's something redemptive and creative and beautiful in the conversation. I try to do that with the show by not having just famous people on. I try to be so prepared and intentional that I bring the fame out of the people.
I could totally attest to that. You're really good at drawing the best out of people.
Thanks.
Since we're on the topic of leadership and management, that's something you're by far phenomenal at. You know, leading a team always has its challenges. You know, you built your team from where it was just you to a full-blown operation. You help business owners and enterprises build teams, management, and everything like that. But what's a leadership style that you have? Kind of give us an example on how it helped you and your team through a tough spot, or, you know, maybe the clients you were advising, how did it help them through tough spots?
I don't have anything else. I'm bought in. So much so, my wife is bought in. Like she's made me what I am. Yeah, this version of me. Yeah, it's funny when I'm walking down the street, if I get any type of positive compliment from a third party, I'm thinking, you don't know who created this. It's like a sculpture, right? We are on a mission for our vision. And we're all in. We're engaged. We're not trying to be or do something else to our awareness. Our advisors and our people are there, and they'll let us know when we aren't. And they're there for a lot of reasons, but that's one of them. A lot of the problems can be solved by just being engaged and being all in. And I think I'd like to potentially give the listeners another idea of what it takes to build a business. I'm not a fan of the idea that I should feel ashamed that I work in my business. I'm actually proud that I work and serve. I'm proud to work for and with the clients, the customers. I'm not opposed to growth. Of course not. Without growth, there's no future opportunity for the people that work for and with us to grow more, to have more responsibility. Their ability to respond is accountable to the growth of the organization. Being engaged and bought in and focused and disciplined and, you know, and when I say, oh, we have nothing else, it's like tongue in cheek, right? To make a point, the dramatic. This is, we're on a mission. This is what we're doing. It's a mechanism to achieve the things that we want in our life, but it's a joy. It's like, it's an enjoyment. So being engaged in the business, if someone's listening to this and they realize they're not as engaged, figure out why. Get help. We want to be engaged. A disengaged ownership is going to have a less enjoyable future in their business. I just had the pleasure of being at the Berkshire Hathaway annual shareholder meeting in Omaha, Nebraska. And Warren Buffett is still engaged. He's not in the health that he once was, and his partner has leveled up to the next, you know, 99 years and 11 months, basically. He passed away on November 28th, 2023, at 99 years old plus, Charlie Munger. But those were engaged. And they had all the things that if you're interested in family and wealth and sociability and spirit and friends. So that's like a big one. I hit people like, hey, any literature person of influence that you're attracted to, that's kind of the undertone is creating some degree of like shame or feeling less than, like you're not good enough because you're working at, you know, in it or a part of it, or, you know, you should be farther ahead and like more other people doing everything. There's half truth. There's truth that, yeah, we need more people, right? But we don't want a disengaged. I would argue that's not a healthy culture when you have a pyramid and slaves building.
Corporate America.
Potentially, because it will a large company can corrupt, like, you know, because the larger it gets, it becomes inherently harder to keep freedom of thought and speech.
Right.
Like, I'm afraid to say what I think because I'm just the number in this giant machine.
Yep.
It's on management to create that trust through transparency and being engaged. When the management's disengaged, people tend to become disengaged too, even below their awareness. And then they start getting penalized. Now they check out. So there is a correlation with the large organization, but we specialize in the private space, you know, companies anywhere between 8 and 9 figures. Like, we have not yet experience in the 10 plus figure revenue, and that's mostly just because haven't asked or been asked. And we've grown with those that we've worked with over the last half decade plus. In these private companies, right, founder to CEO, the same thing can happen. And it's likely to happen, or more, it's likely to happen, period, more likely to happen if those types of ideas start baking in the person of like, from my observation, you should be doing something else over here and not working and there's that unspoken, even like shame, like, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not working on my business. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing it. So that starts to undermine culture, like the order matters. So no, I see it in small businesses every day. Disengaged leadership, too good to make the call, or too busy to pick up the phone. It's not going to help the culture. The more busy I am to pick up the phone, that person's going to need to do, I'm going to have 30 conversations to make up for the two that I wouldn't call them back on. And the talented person is going to resent me and leave. The fool is going to resent me and stay and just be unproductive. And now I won't have any profit. And now I really want help. And I may get it from people that are not fit to give it, because they don't know. So I see that crazy in small business, private companies. Corporate America can really work too, just like private can. There are CEOs Jamie Dimon, very impressive. Brad Jacobs. Anyone listening to this, those two people, those two just come to mind right away. Like, Brad Jacobs, XBO, GXO, RXO. He has a book. How to Make a Few Billion Dollars. Don't let the title give you the wrong impression. It's much deeper than that. He had a funny interview about where he was saying that the title, he came up with it because of like some Pamela Anderson book or something that he saw, like, pulled a lot of copies, like how to have sex or something like that. But has a lot more depth than the title sounds. Don't let it turn you off. Or maybe if it really turns you on, you might not be the right reader for it. It's kind of backwards. Jamie Dimon, though. Unbelievable manager of a public company. Just so many admirable qualities. So it can go either way. And that would be being engaged. And then I've said that word so many dozen times today. It's like, well, what is engagement? Well, as Munger would say, invert, always invert, turn it around. What isn't engagement? What is not engagement? I'll make a list. I'm just off the top of my head. Whether a customer or employee reaches out to me and I'm not quick, that's disengagement. Because I serve them. The money is the trade. Like, that's where. So don't put the values on the company wall that says we care about service to our customers. Don't be a hypocrite. So disengage is, I'm not going to answer with haste or in a timely manner. The team meetings, like a meeting, disengage. If the meetings are not exciting and vision oriented, and there isn't information coming from the people, right? The thoughts and feelings and emotions and ideas of the people, then we're not engaged in the meeting. Now, if we don't, and this, there's a learning curve. If we don't know how to be engaged, yeah, we got to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part of starting businesses and building businesses. Well, we got to learn how to be engaged. Accessibility, rituals, like and the quality of them. Like, do they happen? How do they happen? Capital. Reinvesting in the business. Because the business will create earnings. And it's growing or it's regressing. So it's going to take, every business has a certain amount of, because not all businesses are created equal. You know, some can be continue to come back every year with, like, they're not very capital intensive. Others are extremely capital intensive.
Right.
So let's say that someone listening to this has a very capital intensive business. I would argue being disengaged would be taking too many chips off the table to the point where it negatively impacts the future of that child growing into an adult. That's disengaged. It's engaged in something that's greater than that. There are going to be consequences. Now, if that's part of the big vision, the engaged leader is able to articulate that and able to get feedback from the team about how that's crazy or that's wrong or that's right or what about this. But it's hard to do all those things when the person, the person in a position of absolute authority isn't sure what's next. Maybe they've gone beyond anything they could have ever imagined of who they would be and what they could achieve. And don't know what to do next. Like, success creates in itself a degree of disengagement, because once we've won, we have to start the game over. So like if we have a crazy year, right? We crush all records. We go on vacation for 3 months. We're going to be disengaged. Now, maybe we earn the vacation, but at the end of the day, we're going to have to get back. And so that would be, that's one way to look at that all affects culture, because culture is modeled. It's responsibility is modeled. People see it and watch it and feel it. Accountability is taken or given. Those terms get confused a lot. The people need to see me. And if they don't see me, they need to hear me. And they don't just need to hear me with my talking at them. They'll hear me through my listening with them. Responsibility is modeled. Accountability is given or taken. You hold me accountable when, you say, Jay, or you've given me feedback on things before and you told the truth. Because I asked for feedback, that's a form of accountability. You're saying what you think, that it's not coming from me, it's coming from you. How I listen to that will reflect my degree of responsibility. Oh, everything you're saying is garbage. Jay, you just asked me for my opinion. So I know I went down this hole about responsibility and accountability, but those terms get confused easily. An ownership listening may want their people to be more accountable, not realizing they're not as responsible as they need to be. And it's the beauty of owning the company is you don't have to fire yourself after you lose the company money.
You just better get back on track. it's funny that you said you shouldn't feel ashamed of being an operator working in your business, because I think, all these so-called gurus really put a lot of stress on, hey, you should be working on your business, not in your business. And like you said, I agree with that to a certain point. But at the same time, like, I've tried personally to disengage, to delegate and remove myself from my business. And then honestly, it hurt the business more than it did good, because it gave me a lack of being. It gave me a lack of purpose. And also kind of, I think it put a real big damper on the culture as well, because, you know, me, I'm in affordable housing. We do a bunch of different affordable housing initiatives and we build nice homes, blah, blah, blah. The guys like seeing me checking up on the job sites, delivering material every now and then. Hey, we do an axe throwing event. We'll take the guys out for appreciation, stuff like that, and be, you know, a part of it, because then they get more taken in on, hey man, this is a great vision. He has a great attitude. He's doing it here with us. And it honestly just propels everything way, way faster. And you know, you said also about accountability. And I think accountability and criticism goes hand in hand, but truthful accountability and truthful criticism. Like, you know, hey, you ask for honest opinion and feedback on X, Y, Z. Well, the only way that individual that asks for the accountability or asks for the criticism can truly grow is if they take anything that person says, negative or positive, with an open mind, goes back to the drawing board and says, hey, man, he's right. I lack in this, or I'm good on this. How can I be better? Because the majority of people in our world, they take criticism like you just punched him in the throat. And it's like, hey, if only you realize I'm a better friend than half of the people that you're surrounding yourself, because I told you the truth for once in your life, you would be thanking me. Just had this conversation last night with some friends of ours at Butcher and Singer. And it was like, you know, so many more people need to be truthful, even though it may hurt or feel uncomfortable. And that's the way I've always lived my life. And, you know, growing up, my mom and my dad thought I was too brutally honest. But at the same time, you know, why would you want to not tell the truth and be fake?
I wrote this down. If people don't want, if going back to the other thing about, well, I should probably say this first. The truer it is, the harder it hurts. That's where it puts the onus on me, as the truth giver, to have to love the person that just, that's where I think that breaks that domino effect, because the truer it is, the bet is statistically that you're just going to be so angry with me. I better love you after, because you're going to beat the living hell out of me.
Oh my.
So like, that's how I've tried to navigate to survive in my truth giving, is to love people proportional to how angry they get with me when I'm honest, or else I just piss everybody off and I'm upset, like perpetually, you know, resentful. And so, yeah, that's where I think the value of forgiveness comes in, or, you know, whatever one would want to call it. It's like, cause I'll use myself. The more, let's say that you observe something of me that it's so true that I just lose it. It's like I'm not even there anymore. I've separated from myself. There's just this other person that's now attacking you. So I hope to God that you care enough about your values to not stoop to my low. And that's where relationship, I mean, it's like that's relationship come in. Because the more true it is. Oh, and then, of course, we add things to complexity, like, it's easier, I think, to say something that's true in a group, but easy creates problems, because then if you don't want to shame somebody, there's the shame has to do with who's there and how many are there. So the same conversation, let's just use a business context, right? Like, let's say you have to, you know, you feel compelled to call to attention something that an employee has done that is not in alignment with the company. Is the conversation had in front of seven other people that work with the company, or is it had separately? Now, if it's seven other people, what if it just totally destroys them? Why did I need to do it in front of seven people? Was I afraid to have that uncomfortable conversation alone? Maybe. So I do it in front of the seven people. And so we can undermine ourselves not trying to. Maybe I'm afraid to have that conversation one-on-one. I see this manifest a lot in a business context is person A has a problem, conflict, a disagreement with person B. It's easier to go to for person A to go to person C about B. It's easier for person B to go to person D about A. So now it went from A and B to A and C and B and D. A's talking junk about B to C. B's talking junk about A to D. And all of a sudden, Z knows what's going on with A and B. You got the whole alphabet involved. That destroys culture.
Right.
Destroys trust. And there are things that we have to do to lower that. Because that, by the way, that's a natural. That's why this is more of my opinion, but you know, people like therapy and things and coaches, external people like we exist to help in that. If we're professional, the worst thing is when you have a professional firm outside, a coach, a mentor, an advisor that can't keep secrets, can't keep confidentiality. Then they go and they gossip around everybody. Oh, that's the worst. If you're a company and you invest into professional services, and the service now is doing that. Now it just completely destroys the company. Like it's on another level. So anyway, where I'm going with that is that there are things that can, you know, more surgically with intention be done to lower that A and C conversation, B and D conversation about A and B's issues so that it doesn't get to Z. And why is that relevant? It slows down productivity. We're not talking about problems. We're only talking about people. We need to be talking about problems to grow a company because problems are a consequence of opportunity. Like they're a consequence of success. Like why did I get hired in the first place? Why do you have the opportunity to rehab a house? Because of problems. There's a problem with it. Like you're going to buy it for 60 cents and sell it for, you're right. You're going to buy a dollar for 60 cents and make a spread. There's going to be problems to get it from 60 to a dollar that need to be fixed. Or else why would there be value to buy it? It's right. Going to take people to solve those problems. So if we're just talking about each other, we're competing against ourselves and we're not competing against the other businesses. So we exist, you know, part of what I think my value to businesses is trying to avoid these naturally occurring things and get focused on task and grow the businesses and grow the visions and grow the profits and have meaningful culture. Like, how do you have profit and purpose? Not, oh, profit's bad, or it's all about purpose, or profit's what it's about. Forget purpose. Show up and just do your job. I think there's a hybrid, right? Profit is what we use to innovate. Profit is what we use to reinvest in the business. Profit is exciting. Profit creates job security and upward mobility. Profit shows us if it's like a report card. Like, are we not succeeding? So if someone's listening to this that doesn't feel attracted, this is something I really feel strong about, to this idea of being an engaged employer. Like, oh, this is not for me, guys. Like, well, then I would say, I wrote this down. If the people don't want this, then they should work for a leader who does. Like this as in starting a company and creating an empire is a life commitment. If that's not attractive to anyone listening to this, find a leader to work for. And work that makes you feel like you're working with them. Don't get bought into the half truths. Like starting a business and creating an empire, it's a trade-off. So the people that are listening, You don't want it. You really don't want it. Find somebody. Find a leader. Because you're not it. You're not the leader. Like, find a leader.
Yeah.
Or, you know, to be, maybe you don't have, who are your mentors? Who are your advisors? Who are your people? Can't, maybe you say, no, no, that's BS. Well, maybe, oh, then I'm wrong about you. You have some fight in you. Well, then learn what to do. But it's a commitment. It's an either or. It's a choice. It's like, you're all in or you're out. Now, if you're out, follow somebody that's all in. That's going to be a fun life. You can still have family, all these things. I know you wanted to say something.
I totally agree with you. And this has actually been coming up a lot more lately. Since, like, you know, social media is so have blown up, you know, being a business owner, CEO, executive has been this new sexy glorifying thing. However, not everybody has what it takes. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's a lot. Like you said, it's a trade-off, and you have to be okay with that trade-off, where some people can find the exact same fulfillment working alongside an exceptional leader and still have by far, you know, one of the greatest lifestyles that they could have. Maybe even better than the CEO that they're working next to, with half the headaches and more freedom. So it's like, I think, you know, more people can focus on doubling down on what they do and being the best version of themselves. You know, because we you know, compare and, you know, put two and two together of, hey, if I'm a business owner, I have freedom, I have lifestyle, I have, you know, financials on my terms. You know, all that thing is great and fine and dandy, but it also takes years and years to get there, if you even do get there. So why not find a leader that you can work alongside, make a wonderful living, hit all the missions, purposefulness, all those boxes that checked off that you thought that being an executive would give you. And at the end of the day, it's on someone else's dime too, right? You're not going to be responsible. You know, because at the end of the day, it's like, hey, if I stop tomorrow, how many people am I putting out of work? So it's almost like I'm on this gravy train to where I can't stop. Because if I do stop, I'm going to let so many people down now. You know, it's like not even just the people that work for us, but the people that were on this mission to solve that problem, which is affordable housing. And, you know, a lot of corruptness in affordable housing, we're trying to get rid of that stuff. So it's like, okay, not only letting the people that work with us and their families and their future families down, but it's also all the families that are moving into our properties and that hear about. I'm letting down all those future people. So it's a big undertaking where you can just be a really high performer within an organization and get almost the same fulfillment, if not more. And that's my opinion. So let me ask this. Jay Duran, what does an average day look like for you?
Well, today I got up. Almost like you ever see, you know, whether it's in person in the movies, like a baby that's coming out of the womb.
I have not, no. I'm not there yet.
Yeah, just 5 more minutes. Just envision a baby, right? I'm so tired. Last night's call was 3 hours and 12 minutes with someone that I've been really in trying to work with for 6 years. And for 6 years. And it was a 3 hour, it was supposed to be an hour call. It's 3 hour and 12 minute call. And it's still unclear if we're there yet. So I barely slept. I got up crying and moaning And my wife saying, wear this, put this on, hurry up. And I had an 8 a.m. show with the real Brian Ash. Shout out to Brian. On our Berkshire recap part three or part two. Before that, we had to pick up the dry cleaning because we're on the road 6 months a year. And you got to learn how to get clothes cleaned and just, it's a whole process. We spent a lot of time in the field working with the people that we work, serve, our client partners. I'm not a fan of giving, telling people what to do. I like to do it and discuss. And then I had a show at 9 where I'm going to be interviewed by someone on the Culture Matters podcast interviewing me. And that got rescheduled because of something external, you know, extraneous or out of my control. And so I got some organized the week and prepared for a interview I have today at 12 noon Eastern time with a new guest on the Culture Matters podcast that's not yet beyond. So I didn't just sit there and stare at the wall and drool. And then I had some thoughtful time to think about, I wonder where this conversation is going to go today that we had at 10 a.m. Eastern. Between now and 12 Eastern, like when this is over, I'm going to make sure I'm 110% prepared for the podcast so I can ask the best possible questions based on the person's. I came up with it called a culture map. It's a process that has helped me prepare for so many interviews at such a high level where I break down, essentially go through like various social sources, where they went to school, what they studied, what years that were, when were they born? That goes in my calendar. How old are they? How old were they at various cultural events? Like what presidents were active when they were that age, where they worked, all the places, how many, what were their names, what were their roles? All that helps me ask better questions on this show. It's called the culture map. And then I have a meeting at 1. I have to send a message, a personalized LinkedIn invite to someone that I met at the Berkshire event, somewhere between there that's going to come on the show. And I have a meeting at 2:45 to 3:45 and then 4 to 5. And then we're going with some of the team tonight to see Jordan Peterson in Pittsburgh. So I get to see Jordan again, give him a hug, because when you do the VIP, you get to see him. And then, probably be in bed by 11. And then tomorrow I have a flight to Philly very early and some calls. And then I'll go drive from Philly to North Jersey to see my 85-year-old mother and hopefully some other family. And then drive 2 hours down. Gratefully, Jenna rented me an Escalade. Yeehaw! That'll be fun. a Land Rover. Yeah, I was trying to get her to do the Aston Martin, little ego trip.
Nice.
It was like well outside of what would be responsible for a business owners that are trying to keep people employed. So she fought me on that, and she was right. So there you go. And Escalade or Land Rover it was. Back down to Margate, New Jersey, where I'm going to stay with my in-laws. Maybe I'll spend some time with them. I have a meeting 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. Like a long one. And then Thursday, I have to drive about an hour and a half to Lance Bachman's house, his new house, and go catch up with him because I haven't seen him in a while. And then I've got to drive back. I've got to drive to Philly where I'm going to have dinner with some amazing friends at the Capitol Grill, where Natasha's then going to drive us, our driver in Philly, to the Met to see Jordan Peterson again. And then I'll get home around 12 a.m. in Margate, 2 hour drive. At least I'll have the Escalade. And then I have a call at 7 a.m., one of our client partners, and then a call at 8 with one of our client partners. And then I have podcast and then another meeting with one of our client partners at 12, and then I'm going to take the evening to take my parent in-laws to dinner, and then they leave. I'm staying with them. Culture, right? They leave, and I'll have the house to myself Saturday. So I have 10 podcasts between 5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. And then I'm going to go to sleep. And then I'm going to go to the airport Sunday morning. I've got a standing meeting every 7 a.m. or 6:30 every Sunday. And then two more with one of my advisors, someone else, or one of our client partners. And then I'm flying to Kentucky and spending time there for 2 days before Wednesday, I'll fly back to Florida. And then I'll be there until the 21st, where we fly back to Philly, go to Jersey. And then from there, go to North Carolina. And then from there, back to Florida. And then to Vegas for 4 to 5 days for work. And that's what my life looks like.
You said something really weird in there, Jay. You said something about sleep. I don't think it.
I sleep well. Like, this is just a bad week. Yeah, I sleep. I go to bed early. We go to bed early. We just get up early, and we work every day. We're doing it together. We have a lot of responsibility because we have had the opportunity to work with unbelievable people that people would pay to work with. And if you get those types of opportunities in life, you don't screw them up. And so I hope that helps. You know, I color coordinate my calendar. I check things off as I go. I change the colors. Like, I do everything I can. This is not who I am. I am an entitled, lazy procrastinator from North Jersey who had too much love growing up that also wanted to be very, very wealthy, that has a lot of curiosities and no formal education, that's listened to about 12,000 hours of Audible. So hopefully that helps somebody take some risks. And I, you know, there's a lot more to come. I mean, this is the preface. There's no introduction. There's a lot to do.
We're definitely, you're going to be on here a few times to get through your whole story. You know, if you're ever, you know, able to work with your significant other and be partners in business, it is definitely something that is, I think, truly treasured, cherished. Because, you know, I think you can attest to the same thing. Is they always say, like, the man behind the brand. I think it's the woman behind the brand, right? The woman behind the man. I wouldn't be half the man who I am or successful as I am today if it wasn't for my partner and my significant other, the same, you know, partner in life and partner in business. So I'm sure you can attest to that. But while we wrap it up, I have two last questions for you, Jay. Part one is, how do you approach financial planning to ensure stability and growth? And then the closeout question I have for you is, you know, for anybody that wants to dive deeper with you, what's the best place for them to get in contact with you or find out about more about Culture Matters?
If they listen to the Culture Matters podcast, to the episodes where the revered Tony Capullo, founder of South Fork, is actually interviewing me about Culture Matters, but we're on 10 episodes. They're not all out yet, but there's enough there, meat and potatoes. Type in my name and Tony Capullo on the Culture Matters podcast, as well as my name and Christine Beckwith, because we're doing a series chapter by chapter going through her book, Finding Honor. If they invest in her book, Finding Honor, Your Journey to the Truth, it actually goes through her story of investing in advisory and myself and our firm, and the whole book is about that. That was an easy way. You can reach out to me if you want to get to know me. 267-885-6418, that's my number. And approach financial planning would be how to have a business that produces profits, and not just profits, but, you know, after tax savings, which is a call to our how we live. We live, I think that below your means is a paradox, because anything outside of having enough to tithe and enough to save is, that is the means. So that's a character thing, which is a exemplary of our relationship and the various advisors that we have in our life. You know, shout out to Alan Weiss, who's been an advisor, one of the top consultants in the world. Gary Nash has been on the show, Culture Matters Podcast. Shout out to you, Gary, who I met in 2014 when I was his trainer in Wall Street. He's now on the team, you know, with us. And shout out to our, we have various financial advisors. You know, I'm pro advisor. How could I not be? I mean, I could very well easily not be, because I met plenty of people that are advisors that have no advisors. But I'm not interested in being that type of person. So I would say a tremendous amount of time has been spent in where we will be in the next 10 years, 20 years, and 50 years, both with myself talking to myself and with myself and our advisors and myself and my wife. So, you know, having a successful business that produces results for customers and actually enough for itself so we can own a home and have investments into the future. And, you know, I guess the easiest way to say, how do we approach our financial planning is, I was just, you know, we go to Berkshire Hathaway every year. Go, if anyone that's listening to this, get your butt over to Omaha and you will be forced to work on your financial plan. But I'm very pro, you know, investments in the future, pro real estate, pro what you and your life partner, Leanna, has been on the show with you, have created and are creating. And my recommendation is, the listeners, if you're not investing in real estate or trying to, you know, to planning to, that would be a big mistake. That's how Charlie Munger got his original wealth, was actually developing. And Charlie Munger was Warren Buffett's mentor, you know, architect, partner, developing houses with Otis Booth, made millions in the 60s and invested into companies and so on and so forth. So real estate is definitely a way to go, as long as you're not doing it with those that maybe don't know how to do it. So I guess they have to, that's a paradox. If you don't know how to do it, how do you pick who does it? But anyway, thanks for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Jay. Thank you for being on the Philly Fortune Talks podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to Philly Fortune Talks with Jake Penny. Inspired to share your success story? Visit PhillyFortuneTalks.com/guest and let's inspire together.